Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we speak with Liza Cartmell of the Atlantic City Alliance on how she's handling the bad news that has hit Atlantic City this summer and the closure of the casinos. I know someday that she'll wear my ring. The Atlantic City Alliance is a private organization controlled by the Atlantic City Casinos. Liza Cartmell was appointed first president 2 years ago after New Jersey Governor Chris Christie pledged a 5-year program to support the city. The ACA was designed to promote the non-gaming assets in Atlantic City, and Cartmell has taken her lead from the ACA board, which includes all the heads of the casinos. Last summer, country music beach concerts drew more than 150,000 people to the city, and the Do AC campaign has become the signature for Atlantic City. With the decline of the gaming business in Atlantic City, the ACA's non-gaming promotions have become that much more important. But her job got much tougher this summer when 3 casinos announced they were closing down. She spoke with me at her Boardwalk offices in August. Liza Cartmell, thanks for joining us with the GGB podcast. It's good to see you again. We talked when you first started this organization, and you've come a long way, and we're almost up to 3 years now, right?
It'll be 3 years in the fall.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of activity this summer. Let's start with your most recent success. You had the 2 country music concerts on the beach last week, drew almost more than 130,000 people to town for the 2 shows. Tell us how that came about and whose idea it was and how it was put together.
Yeah, well, it started actually almost the day I got here with talking to Live Nation in terms of, wouldn't it be a great idea, you know, how do we feature the beach?
Right.
You know, being the organization that really features Atlantic City broadly, you know, we don't really do things inside the properties. We're all about the outer of Atlantic, you know, the sort of the combination of everything in Atlantic City. And we were, and at that time, there were a lot of concerts that seemed to be being booked in Bader Field.
Sure.
And the issue that we have with the concerts at Bader Field, which is they're a fun concert experience, but the vast majority of the people who go to Bader Field don't come into Atlantic City.
Right.
They park and they leave.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, clearly we're an entertainment-oriented destination, so the ability to offer fun, unique entertainment is sort of really our calling card.
Right.
But for us, the combination of having it where they don't really come and see Atlantic City is really not the right solution. Interestingly enough, also, in our research, we look at people who've been here within the last 2 years versus people who haven't been here for maybe 10 years.
Sure.
And there is just a huge, I mean, this it's just this glacial gap of perceptions around what Atlantic City offers. So we're very focused on how do we get people to try Atlantic City? Because we know that once they get here, almost 60% will come back.
Right.
So how do we structure these concerts? Well, the first challenge we ran into was no one was really willing to take the risk.
Right.
We had a lot of trouble getting acts, be sufficiently comfortable with the outdoor venue.
Sure.
So, you know, we talked to a lot of the big artists,
right,
and they just were really not comfortable. So, you know, it kind of, we thought we were really close last year to getting someone who we thought would be great, but then they changed their schedule and their routing, so it fell through. And so this year, we really focused on the country piece, because they perform so consistently and regularly in outdoor festivals.
Right.
And, you know, they're sort of, they're born and bred to the outdoor environment. So we were able to, we were actually initially looking at these as a big act and a warm-up act. And then they came up with Lady Antebellum after we had booked Blake. And I said, no, they're too big to be a warm-up act.
Yeah, right.
And is there an opportunity for us to leverage the infrastructure? So that's how we ended up with initially booking the Thursday, and then we were able to get Lady Antebellum to really be willing to do the Sunday. So, you know, we basically were able to do the second concert for half the cost of the first concert.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing for us that we're trying to figure out is next time, if we can do this again, is it better to stage 2 genres split? Because we definitely had people who came and stayed, flying in. I mean, we had tickets that were in all 48 states.
Sure, really.
So we can track that through Ticketmaster.
Okay. Right.
So, you know, that's really interesting to us, that it actually increased occupancy in a different way, clearly bringing people who hadn't been to Atlantic City, or what we're looking at also is, do you have two different genres?
Right.
So a lot to learn, a lot to figure out, a lot of analytics that we're doing sort of as a post-mortem on the experience.
Sure.
But for us, a home run in terms of just getting people to Atlantic City, many for the first time.
Yeah, no question. Now, do you have a cost that was all in for the two events?
I do. It's big.
It's big.
It's very big.
Right. Well, just building that stage has to be quite an endeavor.
Absolutely. And, you know, we started down this path, you know, thinking a free concert. What do? We throw up a stage, you know, people come.
Right.
You know, a la Beach Boys 30 years ago, which interestingly enough, Live Nation did that as well.
Okay. I didn't realize that.
But, you know, obviously vastly different environment than 30 years ago.
Right.
So by the time we finished with the police, the fire marshal, the OEM, the beach patrol, you know, all of the things that really had to go into making this event, we've actually discovered that we built a stadium, and we basically built one that we in the future can probably do as a paid event.
Right.
So clearly, if we want to do this and we want to do it again and we would like to do it more frequently, going forward, I suspect we'll be looking more aggressively at making them a paid event.
Right. And it makes sense. I mean, the people were... really enjoyed it, the free event on the beach, but I think they enjoyed it so much that they would pay to do it as well.
Well, we tried to structure this so that it was not advantageous to the scalpers.
Right.
So we limited the tickets to two.
Right.
We went back and scrubbed where we could see that there were sort of repetitive buys, so to speak.
Right.
And then we also limited printing until just literally 10 days before the concert. So it was very difficult, we thought, for the scalpers to be able to basically leverage the free tickets.
Sure.
Having said that, we're very aware that some people paid $145 for tickets.
Really?
Yeah.
But the fact that they were willing to do that
absolutely.
Is positive. Yeah.
That, no question about it.
Okay. So now you're doing the exercise of economic impact and those kind of things.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
So we're taking the ticketing data, we're looking at the hotel occupancy and room rates, and we're working with the professor who does the economic impact for some of the other large events in town, like the air show.
Sure. Okay, great. So you're coming up into year three. How would you evaluate the first 2 years of the Atlantic City Alliance at this point?
Well, I think the first 2 years were really focused on really helping to improve the perception of Atlantic City and also, quite honestly, just learning a lot about what it takes to move the needle in people's minds.
Right.
And, you know, it's very clear to us that the focal point for us is about making sure that we're talking about the exciting things there are to do. And that there's a variety of things to do. If there's a seminal message that moves the needle, it's really those two things.
Okay.
And so, you know, as we look at sort of the, quite honestly, the huge amount of bad news that people are seeing about Atlantic City from this summer with the gaming properties that are being closed down in order to right-size the gaming market, for us, what we need to do is to be able to really reposition, and it will happen. The question is how quickly those properties will be repositioned as regular hotels. Some of that's already happened, the Claridge.
Right.
So the Claridge was sold, new investor from Florida. He's doing some really interesting things. He's repurposing the first floor to be basically a major art gallery. He's repurposing the second floor probably to be a children's museum. And he's repurposing the third level to be group and sort of convention meeting space.
Right.
And then he's going to be renovating the 500 rooms. that investor has also bought the Atlanta Club. So we definitely see that those properties will be converted, but they will not be gaming properties, which, of course, will be a different economic model, but it's also a different employment model.
Right.
So you're still not going to see the level of employment that was in a gaming property that's in a regular hotel property. But that's why we're really, really focusing on the convention and meeting opportunity in the marketplace.
Okay.
So we've done some work with the Tourism Economics, which is the company that does a lot of assessments for various states, including the state of New Jersey, looking at what's going on in this marketplace. So a lot of the statistics that we're garnering in terms of the growth in non-gaming revenue and the growth in employment in the food service and the retail is really coming out of the work that they've been doing. And so there's growth in employment in those areas, but again, it's just not enough to offset the decline in the gaming jobs.
Right. Okay. Let's go back to some of the nuts and bolts behind the operation here. Who is your board of directors exactly?
The casino executives who basically are running the major properties here in town comprise my board.
Okay.
So we are a private not-for-profit.
Right.
We are funded by the casino properties, and they designate senior executives who are basically the board.
Okay. Great. And how do you make your decisions about how you spend your budget? Does the board do that?
The board decides. You know, we basically sit down and we make recommendations, and like any board, they accept them, they modify them, or they reject them.
Okay. So it's majority rules, or does it have to be unanimous?
There's a quorum.
Okay. Is there some spending or activities that you can approve?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a dollar limit that I can independently approve.
Okay, great. How do you formulate the ideas for the campaigns and events, those kind of things? Do people bring you ideas or bring you events?
Oh, everyone brings us ideas. Right. Everyone brings us right. events. But we basically try and use a litmus test of our research mm-hmm. in terms of what are the types of activities, what are the preferences of the potential visitors we're trying to attract mm-hmm. in terms of the things that appeal to them the right. most. So a lot of great ideas come to us, but they don't necessarily resonate with the audience that sure. we're looking to attract.
Right.
So a lot of good ideas, a lot of not so good ideas, right. And you know, we just kind of try to keep an open door and listen mm-hmm. to all of them.
Sure.
You know, unfortunately, a lot of people would like to have the opportunity to help us spend our money
right.
and go away disappointed.
Yes.
But you know, the board is very clear in terms of the priorities around changing perceptions, really helping to really interact with the media in a way that hopefully gives them better data to use and that hopefully is more equitable and fair. We mm-hmm. have found that there's quite a bit of slant in a lot of the media coverage,
right.
and we try to mitigate that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also, as I said, about driving events that, to the extent that we can, given the parameters of being outside
okay.
and basically not within the four walls of the properties, to drive that first-time visitation.
Okay. So how do you work with the media arm of the CRDA, for example, in terms of the message that you're both putting out? Do you get together to coordinate the message?
Oh, we work very, very closely.
Yeah.
You know, John and Susan are great partners, and mm-hmm. we are communicating constantly. We get together very regularly, and we really partner with the former ACCVA staff in
right.
terms of, you know, providing the creative, if you will,
mm-hmm.
and they use that in all their materials. So whether or not they're doing conventions and meetings, they've adopted all the logos, they've adopted the visuals. We spend an enormous amount of money creating the new visual images of Atlantic City
right.
because most of those were outdated, and mm-hmm. also in the new technology.
Sure.
So B-roll that's HD
right.
and
yeah.
you know, digital and all of those assets. So we basically have created a consolidated library of assets that
mm-hmm.
we partner with them on.
Okay.
We use their website. We've basically totally modified their website with all the campaign materials. We recently just rewrote and created a whole new website for them that is mobile friendly.
Mm-hmm.
So it's user responsive.
Okay.
So it used to be a desktop version.
Okay.
So yeah, we are basically tied at the hip.
Okay, great. Let's talk about the Do AC campaign. Obviously, that's the core of all your campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
It's a centerpiece of all the advertising. Have you done any research about how the slogan resonates with visitors and potential visitors?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, the core attribute that people affiliate with or recognize
mm-hmm.
that has the most powerful impact on our potential visitors is the concept that there's a variety of things to do. And that it is more than just gaming. So the fundamental terminology that we use is do.
Right.
Because that is what they're looking for. People
mm-hmm.
are looking for unique experiences. They're looking for things that they can Facebook, that they can social media.
Mm-hmm.
So the more we can put visual images in front of people that say, oh, this is fun, this is cool, this is unique, they will be attracted to it. We also use the do logo, if you will, in
mm-hmm.
the circular pattern. Because if you're at all familiar with beach communities
right.
and you look at the decals that are always on cars,
mm-hmm.
People very much identify themselves by their beach community
right.
in this marketplace.
Okay.
So we were using that sort of visual connection as well.
Okay, great. Now, one of the things that the Atlantic City Alliance doesn't do is promote gaming events. Would you, however, be able to promote something that's a citywide gaming event, say a citywide poker tournament or blackjack tournament or slot tournament,
we could.
Something like that?
We could.
Yeah.
And we've actually talked to the properties at different
mm-hmm.
times whether there's a way. You know, part of our key attribute that we have is we're this agglomerative economy.
Sure.
So we offer huge scale. So whether it's gaming opportunities, whether it's dining opportunities, whether it's shopping opportunities,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of people have great dining, a lot of people have great shopping, some people have
right.
gaming, you know, some people have beaches, but
mm-hmm.
no one has the scale that we have with all of those in combination.
Right.
So we've talked often with the properties about whether or not they can get together
mm-hmm.
to do a citywide tournament. And we would absolutely promote something that is citywide.
Okay.
We're just restricted in terms of individual
properties. Right.
Although, quite honestly, given the increasing research that keeps telling us event, 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 event,
mm-hmm.
we've actually started to weave into all of our messaging, even event-specific things at properties, as well as not in the properties.
Right.
Because it just gives us more tools.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but now, in the beginning, you didn't even mention gaming. Now there seems to be more of a weaving in of gaming to all the other attractions. So it's not like a prohibition. You can't even mention gaming
anymore. No, not at all. Yeah. You know, I mean, the first thing we needed to do was basically shock people out of thinking of us as only gaming. Mm-hmm. So the exclusion of gaming the first year was really just to actually get people's attention. And because there are so few as a percentage of the population, there's really only roughly 7% of the population consider themselves what I'll call gamers.
Right.
You know, people who game more than six. So sure. If Atlantic City is going to succeed, they have to get beyond gamers.
Right.
So for us, it was about trying to reach into the mindset of, I can't tell you how many focus groups we've been in of people who basically say, well, I don't game, so why would I consider it?
Right.
So it was all about just getting people sort of out of that rut.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, you know, it's clearly one of the core attributes of the destination. So we have absolutely put it back in.
Okay. But at the same time, you've got to attract that 93% of the people that don't gamble. So
exactly.
So you've got to have...
the majority of the messaging still is around all the other things
that
we do.
Okay, great. The two concerts were a great draw, but you know, next week we have the biggest draw of the year coming in with the air show, with the military performers, the Golden Knights and the Thunderbirds back in the. We're expecting what 750,000 people here. So
they do. You know, the good news for us though is it's spread over the whole island,
right.
So it's really four townships and the whole residential population, not just the boardwalk and the tourism population.
Right. So this is obviously, you know, a really big opportunity to get this Atlantic City message out. How are you using the air show?
Well, basically this year we partnered with the Chamber in terms of the selection of the broadcast partner.
Okay.
And we leveraged our media buy to assist with the decision and the selection.
Okay.
And we've been able to structure incremental benefits in terms of coverage, because I'll tell you that there's still a very significant portion of the Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey population that have no idea the air show is going on.
Right.
So for us, the ability to get more pre-promotion and more visual coverage during it, as well as post, was really essential for us.
Okay, great. One of the events you did early on was the tightrope walk by the Willenda guy, which I thought was really unique, and got some great coverage on that and all the early morning talk shows and things like that. Are those kind of things that you want to consider them?
Oh, absolutely. Continue? The wackier, the better.
Right.
Would love to do more.
Yep.
There's just only one Nick Willenda.
That's right.
And, you know, again, it's about the outside visual assets.
Right.
You know, quite honestly, we've explored the idea they have dancers who dance on the outsides of buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have seven properties, they all want to be the building.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. That's a very good visual to have on these national shows, for sure. So tell me, you mentioned the events. Does an event have to have a large potential audience for you to really support it, or can it be a real niche type of thing?
Oh, we absolutely love niche ones.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how many times are you going to be able to attract 100,000?
Right.
Usually it takes too big a budget to begin with.
Sure, right.
So we do a number of niche things, but they're all focused around the destination assets.
Okay.
So the volleyball.
Right.
You know, last year we had about 15,000, you know, hopefully maybe 20,000 this year, but we do it as free seating, except for a couple of VIP areas this year. But obviously that's all about beach and about sports.
Right.
You know, we did the sand sculptures.
Mm-hmm.
So the sand sculptures last year, I think was about 130,000. I think we're about 170,000 this year in terms of, but then it's about the beach.
Right.
It's about sort of this huge artistic temporary endeavor to get people just to come down and explore the beaches. It gets them on the boardwalk, it gets them on the beach.
Right.
Additionally, we're going to do the wine promenade again. We moved it from the spring to the fall, because clearly the fall's safer weather.
Right.
But basically, we basically set up a whole series of wine tents.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the food and the dining here,
right. Is
clearly one of our main attributes, but we put it out on the boardwalk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you basically have a leisurely stroll along the boardwalk for the afternoon, just sampling different wines and, you know, different tidbits of food. And it's just a really fun festival-like atmosphere,
right. But
it features our boardwalk.
Right. Now, each of the properties seem to be getting into this wine thing. Caesars has it. The Trop had it a few weeks ago. I remember writing there their morning, seeing it being set up. Is that dilute your event?
No, not at all, because everybody in the world thinks they're a foodie now.
Yeah, right. That's
everybody's watching the Food Channel.
Right.
Everybody's getting farm fresh.
Right.
Everybody's on some sort of diet.
Right.
So it's basically, I think, more a representation of the success in popular culture.
Okay. So the more events we can have like that, the more reputation Atlantic City will get as a free
destination. Exactly. We see them as all additive.
Right. Okay.
So whether it's a beer festival or a wine festival or a seafood festival, you know, those are all complementary.
Okay. Let's talk about the regional approach here. Are you really just limited to the Northeast region, you know, from D.C. to New York, or do you reach out a little further on our own?
We go a little further, you know, closer to Boston. Mm-hmm. And in the spring, we also assisted with the outreach with the new United service.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a limited media spend in Chicago and United to help launch that service.
Okay. So, but still, our core audience...
Primarily the drive-in market for us. I mean, you know, 50 million people in our core market.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of money wasted on trying to bring international visitors here, and while it's a good concept, you know, coming to New York, go to Atlantic City, just never seemed to work, and I guess that's kind of something you're just going to keep an eye on.
We are looking to see whether or not, you know, partnering with the CRDA that we can do better outreach to charter, of course, with the whole new Port Authority.
Sure.
You know, we're all exploring discreetly whether there's incremental opportunities for charter flights to come in. You know, if you think about it, in New York midweek, you're almost spending $500 for a hotel room. D.C., same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, not so much, but still way more than the room rates here.
Right.
So we're really trying to figure out whether we can get with tour operators, say, fly into Atlantic City, stay here your first night. You go up to New York, you travel to Philly, you go to D.C., you come back, you spend another night in Atlantic City, and then you fly out.
Okay. But
by the way, our airport is great, easier to get in and out of. Cheaper to fly in and out of, so less congested airspace, so it's more consistent on time. So we have, again, we think real assets that can leverage, but that's a longer development play.
Yeah, no question about that. Let's talk about the new Meet AC organization. Are you working closely with them on this meetings and conventions?
Very closely, very closely. We, in fact, partnered with the CRDA that commissioned the consulting study that basically evaluated the national programs that are out there in terms of which are most successful, how are most properties doing this, and it was very clear that we needed to get it into a private entity that could independently operate without a lot of the restrictions that the authorities and the governor and the state of New Jersey puts on those type of operations. So we helped them really define the need, recommend what kind of structure needed to be in place, and help them figure out how to structure the board and things. Now they had another consultant that they brought on specifically to finalize that.
Right.
But, you know, the final five board members are a representation of the hospitality industry, and I do participate in the board meetings so that we can keep integrated and coordinated.
Okay. Now...
And also I would need to add that my board did approve $1 million a year to subsidize conventions that are new to Atlantic City.
Yeah.
So we work very closely with them as well in terms of supporting them when they have a great sales opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
We have a formulaic approach that basically I approve various subsidies, whether it's 14, 15, or 16.
Okay. Now, you know, those of us in the hospitality industry, you know, it's hard to build a convention business right away. I mean, and we got behind the eight ball for 2 or 3 years without having a real effort out there. Is there a chance we can get this up and going more quickly than the 2 or 3 years out that you normally need to?
I think that's what the subsidy is all about, because there's always fill-in business.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell you that the effort never stopped, but the effort was constrained.
Right.
You know, when you have salespeople who are being reimbursed for gas at a rate lower than the actual cost, that's not a great sales structure, where you have sales teams that aren't paid by commission.
Right.
That's not a great... Nevertheless, they've grown the business over the past 5 years. And, in fact, the properties themselves have been very aggressively growing. If you go back and look at group sales, which was minuscule, you know, it's been growing at about 30% a year in terms of the group room nights that are actually booked at the properties, regardless of whether there's a convention in town.
Right.
And so we expect to see that to continue. And I certainly hope, and I think one of our biggest opportunities is to put significant investment into group meeting space in all the properties. And, of course, that's what Harrah's is all about, the new conference center. It's about creating group meeting space that is consistent with what people are looking for today. Not everybody's looking for the big exhibit hall.
Sure. And there's a possibility of doing that now in some of these casinos that may close down. They need to do something with the casino space. That would be a perfect use of it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, as I said, the Claridge is probably the property that's most proximate to the Sheraton.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our biggest constraints is the fact that Sheraton is only 500 rooms.
Right.
So a lot of conventions are looking for 1,000 rooms in their host hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So potentially the ability to have the Claridge, again, a non-casino property, reasonably proximate to the Sheraton that could almost function as a co-host, I think is an interesting opportunity for us.
Okay, great. Now, you mentioned your source of funding comes from the casinos. Obviously, the loss of several casinos, or potential loss anyway, will impact your funding. Is that gonna cause you some problems? I mean, do you really need a stable source of
money? $30 million is a fixed amount. Mm-hmm. So the problem for the properties is that unless they can pick up the incremental gaming that's leaving the facilities that are closing, mm-hmm. they proportionately pay in basically based to their market share. Mm-hmm. So if you have 20% of the market, but now you have 25% of the market, you'll have to pay 5% okay. more on the $30 million.
Okay, so your budget is pretty stable. Mm-hmm. Okay. Will the ACA get involved in any of these campaigns that may oppose gaming in North Jersey?
We are not gaming. A lobbying organization. Okay. We're a marketing organization.
Okay. So there'll be no...
No, we do, though, quite honestly. I mean, we would go do editorial board meetings. Mm-hmm. We work very closely with the mayor and with the CRDA in terms of telling the story mm-hmm. of where Atlantic City is looking to go.
Right.
That's very important to us to reach out, make sure the newspapers are better informed, and that is entirely appropriate with the legislators, of course, as well.
Sure.
But we do not lobby.
Right. But so you would tell the story of where Atlantic City needs to go and what the impact of a mm-hmm. casino or two in North Jersey would have
Absolutely.
On that story.
Yeah.
Okay. Sounds like lobbying to me.
Well, it's fact-based.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, we're not trying to sell anyone. We're just trying to make sure that we're getting equal mm-hmm. and fair coverage.
Right. Now, some people have been saying, we should stop opposing casinos in North Jersey because it's inevitable and try to get a piece of it. For example, I heard one observer say, why don't we just get $50 million a year out of that, and then use that to market Atlantic City. Would that be a fair trade-off in your view?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think it would still eliminate jobs and the economy down mm-hmm. here, which is, Atlantic County is 20% of the tourism business in mm-hmm. New Jersey, and tourism is the third biggest industry in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. There are not many cities that do very well in New Jersey.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of other ramifications. I have yet to see subsidy programs like that that can be well managed. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a communist thing to me.
Right.
I mean,
right.
how do you create that kind of a controlled state?
Sure.
I think it's fraught with more complications. Mm-hmm. It's certainly a solution to the problem, but I don't really think it addresses head-on the ramifications for jobs. Mm-hmm. and for right. economic power and for the ripple effect in the rest of the state. Mm-hmm. I mean, currently, the 21 counties of New Jersey all benefit and are vendors that support Atlantic City. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's really traditionally well evaluated or sufficiently evaluated.
Okay, great. So I just have one more question. Do you think the Atlantic City Alliance will become a permanent fixture on the marketing of Atlantic City? Will there be the demand for the Atlantic City Alliance on a long-term basis?
Well, I certainly believe that the marketing of Atlantic City is a permanent fixture
right.
and need. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's funded the same mechanism, mm-hmm. I think remains to be seen. But I don't think in today's world Atlantic City would be able to compete without marketing dollars. Mm-hmm. Does it need to be 30? Can we make a lot of these events self-sustaining? I mean, that would certainly be the goal by the time we get to the end of the 5 years, that a lot of the events that we're creating from scratch can start to get sponsor dollars, can create paid models, so that that funding need might be able to go away, mm-hmm. and then you're left with a more traditional straight marketing need. So I think a lot of that will evolve as we get through the 5 years, but there isn't a destination in the country that doesn't market themselves.
Right. And Las Vegas does it with hundreds of millions of dollars.
As does Orlando.
Yes. So we're just trying to tread water and keep our head above water.
That's right. And 27 million people just don't show up.
Right. Exactly right. Well, after 2 years, I think you've done a great job here. Very difficult job, but and this summer with all the bad news, you've had a lot to overcome. But I think with these events that we've had in Atlantic City, we've been able to certainly show that there's a lot more to Atlantic City than just casinos.
Well, the disturbing thing for us is that the people are the papers in a lot of external markets are making an assumption that a closing gaming property means that the city is not busy.
Right.
The reality is, 95% occupancy, boardwalk is packed, mm-hmm. beaches are packed.
Right.
So the entire perception of us not they're closing because gaming isn't doing well is really erroneous.
Right.
And so that's our challenge, is to make people understand the truth.
Right. And, you know, people say, oh, you've lost so much revenue, but, you know, still a $2.5 billion market is a very strong gaming market. It makes it one of the biggest local gaming markets in the country, one of the top two or three. So, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of, and we should definitely talk about the positives that come with that.
And by the way, we're almost at $1 billion in non-gaming revenue.
That's right, and that keeps growing every year.
And that's growing dramatically.
Right. So those are the messages I guess you're going to concentrate on over the next year.
We're beating the drum, and, you know, we're very fortunate to have a great level of cooperation with all the public officials.
Mm-hmm.
So Don Guardian, right. You know, is a wonderful spokesperson who is very dedicated to the transformation. Mm-hmm. As is John Palmieri.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the legislators are all looking to get data that's supportive of what's been going on to show. I mean, I'll tell you, the interesting thing to us is there's nothing in the legislative act that says this is a 5-year plan.
Right.
It merely says Atlantic City has to reposition itself as a tourism destination.
Right.
And there's clear statistical evidence we're on that path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. Well, Elijah, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. And good luck with the air show next week and all the other events that are going to be coming up.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to share our story.
Thanks for joining us on the Global Gaming Business Podcast. If you want to learn more about the issues discussed today or anything about the gaming industry, visit our website at ggbmagazine.com. For weekly updates on the industry, subscribe to GGB News, the only weekly e-news magazine dedicated to the breaking news of the gaming business. To see a sample issue, visit ggbnews.com. That's it for today. Hope you enjoyed the interview, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.